Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Oracle. I'm Ross. I'm joined as always by Callum. We've just finished training at SBG Aberdeen, and we've got a nice window in our schedule between doing more training and watching NBA playoff basketball to record this podcast. Callum's rooting for the Mavs. I'm a bit sad that the Warriors aren't there. If you're in the NBA, let us know who you want to win the playoffs. Now, on today's episode, we are going to talk about the Brazilian Nationals, otherwise known as the Brasileiros, I believe. And we're going to link that with a discussion about the 80% sub club, an elite club of submission artists who have a very high ratio of their wins coming by way of submission. And there's somebody in that club that's competing in the Brazilian Nationals, and we want to know whether they'll be able to stay in the club after the tournament. So stick with us and you will hear that chat later. But the first thing, Callum, I want to talk about is a bit of correspondence that we received. And in our last episode, what were we talking about?
The Super Grand Slam.
The Super Grand Slam. For anyone who missed the episode, what is the Super Grand Slam?
So it was winning the Gi Europeans, Gi Pans, Gi Brazilian Nationals, Gi Worlds, and ADCC on the same year.
And who is in the running for that?
This year we've got Kennedy, Maciel, and Mika Galvão.
And who previously did it?
Cabrinha.
And who got in touch with us?
Cabrinha and Mika.
Yes, we had correspondence from both Cabrinha and Mika. Not any words from Mika.
Some emojis.
Some emojis. That's how the young folk like to communicate these days, I believe. But Cabrinha did say, let's go Mika and Kennedy, which shows that he wants the two young guns to equal his record, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes in sport, when people have certain records, they want to keep hold of them, keep them to themselves, especially if they are the only person to have such an accolade. So it's good to see Cabrinha rooting for the young duo to come in equal what he achieved. Both are in action this weekend at the Brazilian Nationals, which is going to form the major part of our discussion. In the Brazilian Nationals, well, the athletes we're going to focus on, first of all, are the ones who are going for the Grand Slams. So there's a few competitors in each division. I think it's fair to say that some of the divisions are not as exciting to us when you first look through the list of competitors. You're nodding for anyone who's on the podcast version with no video accompaniment. Why are you nodding along there?
Yeah, I agree. So not to say that there isn't great grapplers in each division, but obviously you're more excited by the names you're familiar with and that you know a bit backstory there, and you know their kind of game and what to look out for. So some of the names in the division we're maybe not as familiar with at this point.
I think that's fair. It's maybe even our fault why we're not as excited.
Yeah.
But the joy of watching the competition is you get to find out who these people are. Now, going for the Grand Slam in Rooster weight, we have Paulson, who has looked very, very good through the Europeans and the Pans, and looks like he is well on course to doing the Grand Slam.
Yep, agreed with that. It looked really good in this first two outings in these Grand Slams at Europeans and Pans. I think he's kind of settling into his division, his kind of place in the division as being the guy to beat, and potentially the new kind of Bruno Malfacini of that division. So we'll see how that carries over into these two competitions coming up.
Yeah. Mikey Musumeci, he was the new Bruno Malfacini in one time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Remember him?
Yours, yeah.
Maybe Taliesin is the new
Mikey.
Who was the new?
Yeah.
Right. I'll always say this with Taliesin. I think it's his top game that sets him apart from other guys in that division. He looks really, really good passing and solidifying passes. And that makes a difference when you sweep, and that's a very sweep-heavy weight class. So you do see a lot of sweeps happening in these matches, and people aren't able to stay on top for the rest of the match. But I think Talisson's showing a real ability to consolidate when he gets his 2 points. The next division features that we're going to talk about features the aforementioned Kendi Maciel, who is on for a Super Grand Slam. He has some contenders to deal with in this division. Although, in saying that, whether he has to deal with one of them remains to be seen, because Isaac Döderlein is of the same affiliation, Alianse, and Shinde both make it through the bracket. We could well see a closeout there. The two guys who are likeliest to also throw themselves in the mix are Alex and Diego Sodré, though, and they're really good competitors, so we could see one of them get into the semis or the finals. We mentioned Kennedy on the last pod. For anyone who didn't heed it, we've not really been able to identify why there's been such a difference in Kennedy's win ratio this year from watching him perform. It just seems that he's made a switch in mentality or something like that as to like why he's racking up more wins. So we'll be on the lookout to see if we can identify anything in his game that's different. And then the other male division I really want to touch on is middleweight, where we have Mika Galvao going for the Super Grand Slam. Andy Murasaki, who has twice faced Mika in finals thus far, Euros and Pans. And we have someone who could get in the mix, although it is going to be very, very difficult for them. But the other name that jumps out that we've mentioned before on our podcast when we're talking about the Brazilian trials is Fabio de Christian. And might be a bit early for him in his development at the black belt level to beat a Murasaki or a Mika, but he is definitely one who's on the up. What do you think about that division? Is it likely to be another Mika Andy final? And would you expect Mika to win again, if so?
Yeah, unless we see something like this injury from Pans playing a part in it, I don't really see it going any different. I presume they'll be opposite sides of the bracket, probably seeded 1 and 2. I don't see them not getting to the final, and I don't really see it going any different than we've seen it twice already this year with Mika coming away with a win.
So you're Mika Galvao.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You've got a sore foot, having been aggressively attacked in the first match you had at the Pans, which resulted in some damage to your foot, and you saw Mika change his game a bit. But how would you play it this time? You're going in the tournament from the first match. You're carrying a foot injury. What would be your strategy?
I guess it's easier to access the feet of someone when you're on top. Typically, you tend to associate leg walkers with guard players, but I think you actually had easier access to grabbing the leg if that's really what you want to do from top position. So Mika's got really good stand-up. So unless he can pull into a closed guard, like we saw against Andy in the finals of Pans, that would be quite safe for him as far as avoiding the legs. But as well, if he can just get to top position via wrestling on the feet, and then there, it's quite hard for his opponent to access the legs if he stays away and plays certain passing games that we saw in previous competitions, like at the end of Pans, we did a lot of over-under passes. So I think staying on top from the get-go or against closed guard and then keeping his legs far away when he's on top should be all right.
It'll be interesting to see his mobility wrestling, though, if he is carrying a foot or ankle injury, like how comfortable he is moving around there, or whether he's going to want to be on his back. I think we'll see him pull closed guard quite a lot.
I think there is a decent chance so that he will be pretty healed up, especially at his age. Just an ankle injury as well doesn't tend to last the longest compared to some other injuries, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's like 90-95% good to go and it's not going to affect him too bad, but I'm sure it'll still be somewhat on his mind.
The only thing I was thinking about that as to why it might still be enough a problem is because he pulled out of the WNO match that is in early May. So you're thinking, well, maybe that's because it's got more heel hooks in it than the IBJJF Gi division, that he's thinking, well, I can get through the Gi division, no problem, like, you know, and keep myself out of straight leg lock danger. But in a no-gi match, when heel hooks are live, you know, I might, if I'm 95% healed, I'm still not going to take that risk.
Yeah.
And I think his focus is the Super Grand Slam this year. We're going to come back to Mika in a smidge, right? I just want to talk about some of the females who are also going for Super Grand Slams. So, Roosterweight, we have Shelby Murphy from AOJ. She has won Euros and Pans. And we have Talita Silva, who I wasn't really aware of until I'd learned that she'd won both those earlier tournaments. So there are two in the female division that are on for the Grand Slam. And we have the most dominant athlete in all of jiu-jitsu out again, and that's Gabby Pisania, who I believe is on a three-year undefeated streak that is, last time I checked, was 119-0, and it might be above that by now. So, yeah, really interesting to follow now, because the first time she loses is going to be a big story in jiu-jitsu. So, while I don't wish a loss on anyone, and hopefully she can keep her streak going, you've got the two extremes there. It's either that she's going to create like the most amazing win streak that's ever happened in jiu-jitsu, or, well, eventually she will lose, and it's like, well, who beats her? How did they beat her? And who is this person? So,
for her as well, doing the absolutes, that would be like a double Grand Slam as well, winning her division and the absolute for each of the majors.
What do we call that? We've got the Super Grand Slam, and then in the ADCC, what about if you go through gi, weight, and absolute, and double up? I'm sure it's happened before. Colored belts.
Yeah, I remember, I think Roberto Jimenez did it at purple belt. I think Keenan maybe did it at purple belt as well. I remember Baby Shark doing it at juvenile blue belt. So I can't remember the name for it, the term for it, but there's been occasions where people have Grand Slammed through the gi, majors anyway, in their weight and the absolute.
It needs a cool name. It can't just be like the double Grand Slam or something. If you have an idea for what to call it, let us know.
The absolute Grand Slam.
Well, but then
that would be if you just won the absolute division.
Maybe. Yeah. So we'll try and come up with something, but if you can come up with something, let us know. Now, on the aforementioned topic of the sub club, and coming back to talk about Mika Galvão, there was an article that was shared on Jean-Jé Ribeiro's Instagram, and it showed the active grapplers with the most amount of subs in their wins. So, for example, Gordon Ryan was top of the list with 81 subs. And also on the list was Mika Galvão, who had 70. So he, for the age of Mika.
This is just at black belt as well.
This was just at black belt, I believe. And Jean-Jé was just behind Gordon, I think, 79, as opposed to 80. Or maybe he was 80. And he was like, should I get two more subs and that'll put me over Gordon? So I think Jean-Jé was probably on 80 and Gordon's on 81. But Jean-Jé's had way more matches.
Yeah.
So I think Jean-Jé's submission ratio in his wins is something like 50%. Way down from Gordon, who's on 82. But then I had to look at Mika Galvão, and he is at 70 submissions in 88 wins. And I was like, well, that's 80% as well. So then the question became, like, is 80% the threshold for being in the elite sub club? And then we started going through some different names, and I was like, well, who else could be in this one? So first name that came to your head would have been, out of anyone else other than Gordon and Mika when we started talking about this, who's the guy you said, oh, he's probably on?
Current.
No, just you came up with two names.
Marcelo and Roger.
Right. So Roger, and this is just going by the BJJ Heroes statistics, which is a good reference place, but I do find jiu-jitsu difficult to get accurate statistics on because it's not the NFL or the NBA where you have huge teams of people that are paid a lot of money is put into the system, etc., to keep track of all these things. So there might be matches missing and stuff like that, right? But I think it's a pretty good gauge. Anyway, Roger Gracie, 82%. So that is at the top end. That's like the same percentage as Gordon. So very impressive. Marcelo Garcia came in at 65%. So good ratio, but not in the elite subclub. Now, I hope you're still following this, right? I'm going to take Roger out of the running, though, because he's no longer an active competitor. So of the active competitors, we have Gordon Ryan at 82% and Mika at 80%. And there's a couple of other active competitors that also get in there. So who did you suggest of the active competitors?
Craig Jones.
So Craig, according to BG Heroes, has 48 submissions and 60 victories. So again, 80%. It's going to be really, really hard to get above 80% by the look of things, because you've got like Gordon, Mika, and Craig all pitching around there. And then we threw around some other names. So Callum came up with a couple of good suggestions. One, Eddie Cummins. Why did you go to Eddie? What made you think of him out of the blue?
Yeah, he turned his game, and just people weren't really used to that back then. He kind of had access to technology and information that nobody else did at the time. But like, his submission rate would be as high these days, with everyone else being a bit more versed in the leg locks. But back in the day, most Eddie Cummins wins that I can think of were him heel hooking his opponent.
What I will say on Eddie Cummins is that when I go through the list of people, so Callum's throwing names at me like Tynan Dalpra, Cade Rotolo, Ty Rotolo, like guys who do submit a lot, but Mikey Musumeci. But what you see is, as soon as they're in IBJJF Worlds or ADCC Finals, it's difficult to have like a high ratio of submission wins, and there's a lot of like points victories appear. So I would say with Eddie, like a lot of his wins will be coming at events like EBI and stuff like that, and not at ADCC or IBJJF Gi, where it can be a bit harder to keep a 8 out of 10 submission rate.
I think that being said, though, some of the guys on that list, like Craig, definitely with some of his recent matches have been quite the mismatch as far as his skill compared to his opponent. So there's caveats with everyone's list, I think.
Because we're talking about current jiu-jitsu, big events, Craig was back in action in the pit and picked up a win by triangle choke. And if you've not seen it, have a look on Instagram or any other social media and you will see it. But a bit of an interesting situation with the finish. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
So you had the triangle.
Yeah.
And then the ref was going to stop it. And then it seemed that the guy protested that he was not out. And so they put the triangle back on, and then he did go out right away. So that tends to suggest to me that the triangle was probably on beforehand when the ref intervened. But we mentioned this as well. This is the first time you've listened. We talked about the pit before. I still contend it's an amazing environment for grappling.
Yeah, Craig spoke about that on a podcast as well.
Oh, really?
I can't remember the one. Which one it was, but it was one of the ones he did when he was in Dubai. He agreed that he thought the pit was a good environment for a jiu-jitsu match.
Why not ADCC and just make three pits? You know, they have three mat spaces. They're in a massive arena in Las Vegas, and then we can just stop the problem of guys spilling out onto the floor and matches continuing. I'll leave that with you. Maybe you don't want to see the pit in ADCC. I don't know. Maybe people like wrestling on wooden floors and carpets and stuff like that, but I think it's a good way to solve the problem of guys spilling off the mats or constant resets or matches spilling off into monitors and fans and all this kind of stuff. You know, it needs to be like a way to like keep the action where the action needs to be. I do think the pit's like a great solution to that. Whether it catches on, I don't know. Anyway, we're going all away from the subclub. Eddie Cummins, yes, good shout, makes the list, although not currently an active competitor, but an amazing competitor back in the day, and really like probably the main driving force between for that leg lock attack game coming to the fore. Maybe doesn't quite get the credit that he deserves because he now like flies under the radar, but I think he was like a major influence in the way leg attacks that happen. Who else on the leg attacks did you think of?
Dean Lister.
Dean Lister. Again, someone back in the day that probably had access to information that not everyone had access to, right? And he knew he was leg locking people when leg lock defense was pretty poor overall. But he falls just short of the 80% cutoff. Another one I want to talk about is I went on a article and they had a list of all the grapplers that are like high in sub percentage. And there was a guy, Alexandre Vieira, 94% sub rate, 47 submissions in 50 victories. But his best achievement, I say but, I don't mean it like that. His best achievement is winning Nogi Worlds at Brown Belt, which is an amazing, amazing achievement. But again, doesn't put him into like the elite.
So that record, though, is from black belt, because that's what we're looking at, or is that color belt matches?
I do have to double check on BGG. He does now compete as a black belt. Yeah, so it was probably like his black belt record. But again, like at black belt, he's not been competing at IBJJF World Championship level, shall we say. So I'd imagine it's his, because a BGG Heroes does track your black belt career. So it's probably his black belt submission record. So again, super, super high, but it's strength of schedule, shall we say. So anyway, we have on the current competitor list who we are aware of that make the 80% sub club. Although if you can think of anyone else, let us know, because we might be missing some contenders. We have Gordon Ryan, 82%. We have Mika Galvao at 80% and Craig Jones, 80%. So we've gone round the houses with this. But one thing I'm interested in at the Brazilian Nationals is, can Mika Galvao keep his place in the club while he's carrying an injury? What do you think? Is this going to be a sub-heavy performance from Mika, or is he going to have to play it slightly differently?
Well, if my maths is correct, I think he's going to have about four matches, maybe. So anything less of four submissions is going to take that down somewhat, right? So I think given the guys in the bracket, I think he's definitely capable of getting the four subs. It just depends how much the injury is impacting him, but I think he's going to submit everyone in the Brazilian Nationals, but we will see.
Which way do you think he'll submit people?
He's got a variety of ways at his disposal.
So that,
like, most of them coming from chokes from the back or arm bars, I would say.
But that was one thing I noticed with Mika is super impressive, is the variety in submissions that he can get. I mean, there's not an area where you go, oh, Mika's going to submit them from here, definitely.
Yeah.
Could be a choke from the back, could be an arm bar from his back, could be a leg lock, could be some sort of triangle that he latches onto in a scramble. His versatility is amazing. So I hope he stays in the group, but he's got a bit of work to do if he's going to keep that high level, because like 8 out of 10 victories coming by submission is an amazing ratio to have.
Yeah.
And I think that because he is going to end up in the ADCC and the Worlds, they would be tournaments where it's going to be harder to keep your level up. So
yeah,
I think the Brazilian Nationals, if he's going to stay in the group, he needs to be...
Yeah, and if he's now worried about potential injuries hampering his ability to win the Super Grand Slam, we don't know if he's going to be doing some smaller competitions around those competitions or whether he's just going to be focusing on them. That's yet to be seen.
Yeah. So the Brazilian Nationals are this weekend, and we'll have a good look at them, and then we'll be back next week with a recap of what happened, and then looking ahead to more jiu-jitsu events that are upcoming. The schedule gets a bit more interesting in May, some big no-gi events happening. Are there any matches just now that you are looking forward to seeing?
The good Who's Number One card coming up.
Who stands out on that for you?
So we've got Andrew Tackett coming in to replace Mika against Tommy Wangacker. That'll be good to see. Excited to see Baby Shark versus Shane Montague. I think that's an interesting matchup in that rule set. So a few other good match on the card, but those are the two that stand out to me.
Yeah. Shea, obviously being a fellow Scotsman, first Scotsman to be on a Who's Number One event, really leading the charge in Scottish grapplers, like moving up to that level. You know, we've seen Mark McQueen win trials as well, so he's going to be at the ADCC finals. Shea's done tremendously well, particularly in IBJJF event, through all the coloured belts and now a black belt, and it's great to see him competing at an event like a Who's Number One. Just, we'll get deeper into that, but just, how do you think, you said it's going to be interesting, why do you think it's going to be interesting, Shea versus Baby Shark? We'll get more into it in our full preview, but just while we've mentioned it.
It's a rematch from key Europeans at Purple Belt where they faced each other when Baby Shark was just coming off of that weight class and absolute grand slam from Juvenile. I think Baby Shark beat him by one advantage, maybe off of the double pull. Can't remember exactly how the advantage happened, but it was a good close match. I think in a lot of the points rule sets like IBJJF and ADCC, I think it would be a really difficult match for Shea to win, just given the style that Baby Shark's got. Baby Shark's a little bit bigger now than before as well, but I think Baby Shark's ability to not be scored on, having the wrestling advantage, all these things, not to say that he would be able to score much on Shea, but I think his ability to ride out like an advantage point win or until overtime where wrestling happened at ADCC, I think that would definitely favour him. But I think any sort of rule set, I think this like sub-only environment where everything's taken into consideration, the submission attempts, any positional advantages, I think this is Shea's best opportunity to get a win over Baby Shark, because I think Baby Shark will struggle to pass Shea's guard, and then Shea's going to have all these opportunities to go for the kind of crazy attacks that he has from his guard, where he'll not have to worry about getting a score up because Baby Shark's up an advantage or whatever.
And for anyone who's not trained with Shea or seen him compete, why is it difficult to pass his guard?
Yeah, Shea's the most flexible guy I've encountered in jiu-jitsu. So his ability to pull his knees to his chest and invert from every situation makes it an absolute nightmare to pass his guard.
Yeah. So we'll get more into a full rundown of that card. There's the WNO card, and then very quickly after it, there's a Fight Pass event as well. So we're going to see some real big hitters in action in May, which is something we look forward to. But for now, we're going to watch the Brazilian Nationals, hope that Mika can keep up his massive submission rate in his matches, stay at around the 80% mark, along with Gordon and Craig in active competitors, and see who makes it to the next stage of the Grand Slam or even the Super Grand Slam. So we'll be back with a full rundown of what happened at the Brazilian Nationals next time on the Jiu-Jitsu Oracle.